You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 29th of September, 2017. It's Friday night over here in Europe and it's Friday afternoon for most of our American listeners. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, once again, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Hi, Sven. How are you? Okay. For those people who are still waiting for part seven, I tried my best to finish it this week, but it's just not having it. So it's probably at least another week to go. It is proving to be a real pain, but at the end of the day, I'm sure it's going to be worth it.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I mean, we've got plenty of content that to be getting into anyway, I think, with this series that we started. Why the alt-right needs national socialism. I'm not even sure we're going to be able to finish these 25 points tonight, and then it would probably be good to have a bit of a discussion about some of the areas that aren't actually covered by the 25 points, because it is the natural way for people to live, isn't it? It's not specifically German or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Germans adapted it for themselves, but I mean, National Socialism can be adapted by any nation.
And when he said it's not for export, what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, what he was talking about there was Germany taking over other nations and forcing them to speak German, and you know, the sort of nonsense that we were told that the Germans wanted to do. And of course, what mm-hmm. we've actually got since we supposedly we won the war, we've now got people speaking Punjabi and Bengali and Pakistani and Indian and Nigerian, and not just speaking it, our road signs are written in it as well, aren't they?
yeah, it's true, yeah. It's getting to be a strange world.
How are we got to pay for the translators? When they commit crimes and they're taken to court, we have to pay for the translators where they can't even speak English. And we were told we'd all be speaking German if we didn't go out there and give up our lives to fight Adolf Hitler.
Scare tactics.
It is. So this is... You know, we're interested in the truth here at Truth Without Radio. We're interested in getting to the truth of things. And, you know, the World War II truth, National Socialism, and what happened during the war is the most central truth there is, besides the truth of Christ, I think, to the way we live today.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely essential that you understand what went on in the war and what went on afterwards to give you a proper understanding of why the world is the way that it is today and who it is that we're fighting against and who it is the alt-right are fighting against, really.
You know, the alt-right communism by the back door has all the answers, Sven.
It does. And, you know, this is why we wanted to do these 25 points and look at these 25 points and point out how they relate to what's going on today and how they will solve the problems of today. And it was well received, that last episode. It mm-hmm. got lots of downloads and lots of positive comments. And there were a couple of comments that I thought we could start off with before sure. we go back into the 25 points. And the first one was by someone called Red Ford. And he says, please address the fact that Jews are portraying themselves as white and that they are the whites spouting off and criticizing whites. They even admit that they are not white when confronted. Now, we did actually cover this in part four, where it says only a member of the race can be a citizen. A member of the race can only be one who is of German blood without consideration of creed. Consequently, no Jew can be a member of the race. So no Jew could be a citizen. No Jew could be a member of the race. So no Jew would be able to get away with saying that he was white. That's the way that would be adapted for today. And this is something that we see a lot of, especially on Twitter, where they're talking about as if they were white people and talking about white privilege and white guilt. And this is a common trick that they use. But if our people were racially aware, they would know what the difference is between a white man and a Jew, and they would notice the subtle differences. The difference in the nose, the eyebrows, the ears, the lips, the colour of the skin, the difference in character, the difference in the way that they talk. The differences are subtle, but they, you can tell. And back then, back in the National Socialist times, it was even easier to tell who the Jews were because they didn't have lots of blacks and Pakistanis around, which is why they encouraged multiculturalism. But this is the reason for giving them a star. Give them a Jewish star, because otherwise you can't tell who they are.
Well, funnily enough, I noticed, I watched a film not that long ago with Dustin Hoffman and Robert De Niro, and obviously they're both getting on now. And I noticed quite blatantly that the older they got, the more Jewish they looked. And so I took a look at some other older Jews who would have been classed in the youth as white, maybe. It's the same. The older they get, they just turn into this symbolic Jew.
Yeah, the features become more pronounced, don't they?
As they
get older. Same with all people, I guess. I mean, you look at these old Negroes. I mean, they look very monkey-like. The really old ones. And they shrivel up.
Yeah.
You know, but just about that Jewish star thing, I mean, one of the criticisms that I've heard people shout at people that are right-wing is, oh, I suppose you want to put stars on all the Muslims, do you? Jewish stars on all the Muslims. But, you know, that would defeat the object, wouldn't it? I mean, the only reason they had a star put on there is because they looked so similar to white people.
So yeah, and the integrated sort of deep. I mean, they weren't the first to do it. The Catholic Church had done it a couple of centuries before because of the same reason. You just didn't know who they were. They'd kind of a secret society within your own race.
Well, and it was also a way of marking them out as being owned by the king. You know, if you attack this person, you are going to get extra specially punished because they're owned by the king. That's the king's Jews. So they had to wear hats. This is where we get the origin of the pointy hat from, isn't it? The pointy hat for a witch is because the Jews used to have to wear these pointed hats. So a lot of the go on.
Well, even today I feel, you know, that they should be doing something to separate them because they profess not to be white, and 9 times out of 10 you can't tell if they are a Jew or not. So it isn't being detrimental to them. It's just, it's going along with their belief.
Well, their rabbis remind them that they're not white. I've seen articles by rabbis reminding Jews that they are not white. And this is why they associate with themselves with the blacks and with all the anti-racism, because they're not white. And yet every chance they get to, when they can pretend that they're white, to attack white people, they will, like the recent calls to take down statues in London of white people. The people that were calling for that were Jews, but they were pretending to be white. And it's the same in America. People calling for statues to be pulled down there are Jewish. And people look at them that don't really know the difference, and they think that it's a white person that's telling them this. You know, it's a serious problem.
Well, I mean, you look at the Ukraine and they used whites down there. So they will use anybody to, you know, fulfill their agenda.
And a lot of them, you know, they where they are half white, they could get away with saying they're white. I mean, it's why it's so dangerous. You've got to find out who these people are so that you know who it is within your midst that is working against you. Because otherwise you think it's your own people that are doing it. And that gets really confusing. I mean, you try to explain cultural Marxism and everything that's going on, all the attacks against the white race today, and leave the Jews out of it. And you just end up thinking, well, why would anyone do that to themselves? It's like self-harming. You think, why would our governments do that to us? It doesn't make any sense because we're the same people as them. And once you realize that you've actually got this alien group in there that's trying to pass itself off as white, then it suddenly all makes sense. You understand it?
Yeah.
Right. Let's get into this. We've got another comment before we get into number 13, because this relates to number 13. In actual fact, number 13 is, we demand the nationalisation of all previous associated industries. And someone called Arch High Lord Omega says, I still say Spengler was wrong-headed in thinking you could detach the taint of Jewry from socialism of any kind. It is inherently fraught with peril because it leaves wide open the door to massive corruption. It also inevitably stifles the prospect of local community innovation. Oh, you can trust this government, Goy. This government is different. Yeah, right. A strong pro-white nationalist government doesn't need to be all power socialist over its loyal white citizenry to be effective. In fact, Hitler himself said a government cannot sit upon bayonets for long. It is ultimately detrimental to place government in a state of absolute authority without end. Any government, when placed in absolute and endless control of a nation's necessities, will succumb to absolute corruption. Only a fool thinks otherwise. So what would your answer be to him, Dennis?
Well, if you want a, you know, reality check, I don't think there's any type of government whatsoever, whether it be socialist, you name it, where the government does not interfere at some stage. No government will go through life without interfering, and that's just a fact of life.
Well, I don't think it necessarily leads to corruption either, because when you think about the king owned everything. He had absolute power, and he owned everyone. Everyone was a subject. And because he owned everyone and everything, he had no need to have any more because he already had everything. Why would he need to acquire more?
You had everything.
He had a lot. And also, he's going to take care of everything then because it belongs to him and it belongs to his family. So you could say that you're going to end up with you could end up with trouble there because it goes through the family, but the National Socialist system went through merit. Only the people of the highest merit were put in these positions of authority. So they were far less likely to fall to corruption. And later on, one of these 25 points explains about corruption. So we can get into that. And this guy continues to say, okay, so you have some land. It has been in your family for generations. One day you find out there is a massive natural gas deposit under it. The next day the government comes and seizes it all because it's something the people need. That shit ain't ever going to play in America. Well, at least as long as there are Beverly Hillbilly reruns anyway. My land is part of my self-determination. If I find natural resources upon it, in order to relinquish any control, just compensation is in order, or somebody's getting shot. Well, my answer to that would be just compensation was offered, even to the Jews. Everything that was requisitioned by the National Socialists, they paid the going rate for. Which a lot of people don't realize. They think that these Jews had stuff just taken off them. When Jews were owning farms that they shouldn't have because the farms were going back to the farmers, they were paid the market price for that. It wasn't just taken off them. It wasn't just stolen from them. So anything that was actually needed, compensation would be paid for it. And if you're talking about gas and natural deposits like that, then surely the state or the rest of the people in the country have got a right to some of that, at least. And we're talking about gas being used for electricity and for heat for the people in the nation. You've got Scotland now complaining that they don't get enough money from their own oil. So I think what you would have here is the government, if it needed it, they would pay for it. Of course they would. They would pay for it. And if it was gas, then that would be owned by the nation. You couldn't really say that just because of the luck of you actually living on that land, all the gas that was under it is belonging to you. You know, that should go to the nation, I think. What are your thoughts, Dennis?
Well, I think where it's coming from is, while Hitler was around, you know, certainly, you know, there was no question of compensation. I think where it's coming from is, if, you know, 100 years down the line, whatever, with a new leader, will he be as honourable as Adolf Hitler? And if that is the case, and it's quite possible, then, you know, these should be set in stone, these laws, with no movement whatsoever. I think that's the only way to get around it. But he's got a point to an extent. A lot of it is trust. But like I said, anybody about Hitler, like, you know, you do think maybe, you know, there might be a little bit of corruption.
Well, I think this was the importance of having this all written down, having it all set in stone. these 25 points, they said, well, this is it. These 25 points stand. We're not going to change on them. It was almost like a National Socialist Constitution, and everything else grew from these 25 points. But beyond that, beyond that, I mean, we've also got the Bible. We've got the laws in the Bible. And if the state and the nation are going to function properly, then they can look to those laws in the Bible and say, well, there's no arguing there. They come from divine authority. We can't go against that authority. We can't break them. So we have to keep to them. This is the problem. We've allowed our government to change them all.
You know, if somebody gets the old metal detector out and discovers, a chest of Roman gold, then by law you have to hand it in to the crown. Now you may get some pittance of a compensation, but I don't quite believe in that law myself. You know.
Well, I think that's a little bit different, isn't it? A little bit of treasure that you find on your own property, but if you're finding oil or gas, I mean, that's part of owned by the nation, really. I would suggest, and the actual.
Well, somebody owns the gold, and it's not the nation, and it wouldn't be me, you know.
Well, the gold would be found by chance. Yeah. That's like somebody dropping something on your land, but centuries ago. But natural resources, gas, oil, that sort of thing. Obviously, the government would pay you the money, compensation for that. You'd obviously get a percentage of it, but I don't think it should all belong to you. You see what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I think I'd just stash it.
I think we're going to get into some more of this anyway later on, okay. because I mean, these guys have put these comments in there, but they are actually answered later on in these 25 points. Right. So we just did number 13, and we did that partly last week. Number 14 says, we demand a division of profits of all heavy industries. Yeah, I think that's pretty sensible. Surely that's better than taxes. You know, you could just take a percentage of the profits. If it's not making that much, then you're only going to get a small profit. If it's making a lot, then they're going to get a good profit from it. Rather than a fixed tax.
That's reasonable. Is that it's better than the tax system we're living under at the moment?
Yeah, and you know, I don't think they were taxed that much at all, really. The National Socialist in the National Socialist times.
It's only in the dominated countries of our friends, really.
Yeah, it's quite a modern thing to be paying a third of all your money in tax or more. The church used to ask for 10%. I mean, that was the standard. Was 10% of your money went to the church, the tithes. So it's a bit of a big difference,
well,
that, isn't it?
To be honest, it ties in with communism anyway, because it's like that progressive tax they use, which America has, is one of the planks of communism.
Yeah.
In World War II, I think some people were actually taxed something like 95%. I mean, 95%.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. They're paying for something different. Everybody uses the same resources. Each person does. Yeah, see, the National Socialism wasn't like everybody's going to have everything that they can taken from them. Like not have it, all the property is held in common. People still had their own private property. There was still the incentive to do well so that you could earn more. But at the same time, things that were needed, like heat and housing and transport and infrastructure, the electricity, that sort of thing, that was controlled by the state. So you couldn't make a profit from that because it was immoral to make a profit from that. But things like industry, where they're asking for a cut from that, I mean, all of the industry, all the innovation and invention that's gone into that has been produced by the people of the past anyway. So you owe the nation in a way for that because of all the technology that's evolved over the years that the German people had invented. It all comes to its fruition, say, in one big factory, and they're making lots of stuff. And why should all the profits from that factory go to that one guy that had the money to set the factory up? because all the knowledge involved to actually build that and all the skills came from generations of Germans going to school and learning and innovating and inventing. And on the flip side of that, you should never be able to sell these things to these foreign countries. They should never be able to own factories. We shouldn't be able to sell our technology to other countries. We should not be giving computers to the Japanese and the Chinese and allowing them to make microchips. None of them have ever invented any of the technology that they produce. And yet they're producing it over there at a really cheap rate, which does us out of jobs. And we've got people that are unemployed and can't afford to live. And it's because we've given all our technology to these foreign countries. You know, 99% of everything has been invented by white people.
Or stolen from Germany.
Yeah. Stolen from Germany.
This always tends to bring up, you know, some sore points for me because, take for instance, VAT. I mean, that is an unbelievable scam. I mean, there's millions every day who pay VAT on petrol and practically everything apart from children's clothes and can't claim it back because they're not VAT registered. And some people don't even want to be VAT registered because it's such an headache. So there's millions every day kind of a secret tax. And the other one is when somebody who works all the career and is in line for a pension and then dies early. And that pension is then stashed away, you know, locked away to a, probably back to the Crown in London again. Whereas really, that really should be because the person who earned it throughout his year and but eventually died early, you know, that should be passed on to his family. But is anything fair in this world these days?
Well, they gradually try to take away everyone's wealth, don't they? I mean, if anyone has over a certain amount, when they pass away, there's an inheritance tax. So they take 25% or whatever of everything that was handed down. And then when that person dies and hands it down, they take the 25% again. And you think about it, eventually the state's going to own everything. You could have a family, a really wealthy family, and within 200 years, the state will own all of it.
Which is probably the idea, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when you talk there about VAT, I think you've got to have one way or the other, haven't you? And you could say, right, we're going to put 20% on everything people buy, but we're not going to tax you on any of your earnings. Everything you earn is 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, some people can, I mean, you know, people who are VAT registered can claim it back. It's still a ball, eh? Because of everything, you know, you've got to find this money every 3 months, et cetera. You know, and if you're late, you know, they're coming in with thousands of pound fines. But these people who are just ordinary people who just go out every day and buy a newspaper or buy a pack of cigarettes or buy a drink, you know, they're paying VAT and it's a silent secret tax, which really, really annoys me.
Yeah, people just don't realise that it's there. They even put 20% of VAT on paying for servers on the internet.
Well, I think Thatcher put it on fish and chips and pies. If you warm a pie up, they charge VAT. I mean, fish and chips at one stage used to be quite a cheap meal. But with all the VAT and the pies, what were warmed up when you go to, you know, to get a dinner, you know, it mounts up again. And it's just crazy when a pie is cold, you don't pay VAT.
I mean, this is what's so immoral about it, isn't it? I mean, this is things that people need to survive. They need food to survive. And yet they're putting an extra cost on that just to make money to pay usury for the bank. So it's a totally Jewish way of thinking. People need it, so we'll put extra money on the top. And the right way to think about it is well, people need it, and there are going to be people that aren't going to be able to afford it, so we should subsidise it.
Well, another one is when you, when I was actually in Spain, I saw a lot of elderly people buying a lot of cigarettes because the union EU law was, you know, quite... There was no total. I mean, there was in England for a long time, just, I think it's 200 cigarettes. But when the EU law came in, like, then everybody went abroad and bought loads of cigarettes and brought them back over again. And then eventually, without any change of the law, the customers would just take all the cigarettes off you. Just take them off you. They only give you the 200 cigarettes that you were originally allowed.
Is that what they do now? Do they take the whole lot off you?
Well, I'm pretty sure nothing's changed because when I came back from Spain all the cigarettes completely was put in a plastic bag and taken off us with no compensation.
That's disgusting. If they're going to allow you to, if they're going to say we're going to get rid of all the borders and you can travel wherever you like, then you want to be able to buy what you need.
Exactly. We're not breaking any laws.
Well, we know they're a law to their own, aren't they?
Well, you know, you're in World War II and you've got that luxury.
Right. What's the next one here? Number 15. This is a good one. We demand an expansion on a large scale of old age welfare. So what they're basically saying there is that old people are really important to them and they want old people to be well looked after. And if you think about it today, we've got more old people now than ever before. And what have we done? We've imported lots of blacks and non-whites and Pakis, and we've given them the job of looking after our elders. So it's no surprise that we're finding that in these care homes, they're being terribly mistreated in there. And you can expand from this of not just old age welfare, but the National Socialists were very concerned about welfare in all, about people that, for whatever reason, were unable to earn the money for themselves so that they could survive. I mean, it wasn't just the people of the old age. It was the veterans from the wars and the people that had, you know, lost limbs and what have you. They needed looking after. So today you could take from this today that we want to have a good welfare state. People that are disabled, unable to work, need to be looked after. The elderly, they need to be looked after. We don't want to encourage people to be born disabled. We want a eugenic system, but those that have been injured or have contracted some kind of disease, which has left them unable to work, they need to be looked after. Not like today, where they're cutting all the money from people that are disabled and that they're dying straight after. I mean, are you aware of how many of how many people had actually died within 6 weeks of being found fit for work, Dennis? Something like 6,000, I think.
Yeah, well, that's another sore point. I mean, if ever there was a case of an example that we have no rights but have privileges, this was one of them. Because I know numerous people who were unfit for work, but this Conservative government wanted to tighten its belt and try and get as much money out of everybody as they could. And, the weaker of the society obviously feared the worst and fared the worst. And it's criminal because when a doctor gives a sick note, that's a medical note to say that the person is sick and the medicine he needs. And the people who were actually examining these people who were told by the government to go along and get assessed, I think you have to get 15 points to qualify for an actual to stay on the sick, if you like. And it was as if you had one foot in the grave to get anywhere near them points. And the people who examined you weren't doctors. This was a private firm which was given the job of cutting the money so much that the government could feel the benefit of money coming in from an area which usually went out to the old, weak and sick.
Yeah, but they're trying to make money from it, basically. They're trying to turn it into a business.
Yeah.
Private companies being brought in to assess whether people are disabled or not.
Just a private company.
Yeah. I think they had healthcare professionals, they said, but none of them were doctors. None of them.
Qualifications. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if a doctor's note doesn't overrule that, then nothing will.
Well, the doctors got together. Doctors got together and said this law has got to be changed. These work assessment tests you're doing are causing unbelievable stress to these people. We've got people committing suicide. We've got people dying after they've been found fit for work. We've got people that can't afford to keep a roof over their heads. Disabled people that need mobility scooters and cars to get around with. They have them on a lease scheme. Over five or 6 years or whatever. And then when this assessor comes and says, oh no, they're perfectly fine, suddenly they're left with this big bill. They've either got to pay for the rest of the lease, and they haven't got the money for that, of course, or they lose their mobility scooter, their wheelchair, or their car, and then they're really stuffed. And there's thousands of people that has happened to. It's absolutely criminal.
Probably more than that, to be honest. I mean, they tend to pick on certain areas. They don't pick on everybody because everybody, that would cause too much of a real rumpus. But if they pick on the sick, that's only like, say, a small percentage of the nation would actually be sick. So, you know, there is no fight back. You know, you just got to take what you're given, which is nothing.
Well, it's very, very hard for people that are sick and disabled to go out there and protest. So effectively, you know, going after the most vulnerable people, whereas the National Socialists, they put the most vulnerable people right at the front. We demand a special welfare system for the elderly, for old age. And they also had this Christmas help as well, these Christmas drives and proper welfare. And at this time, the state didn't used to actually produce welfare for people that needed it. It was the church that always used to do this. And the National Socialists were one of the first governments to actually produce help for the people that actually needed it. And the unemployed, don't forget, they got all the unemployed back to work by producing jobs for them. But those that didn't have arms and legs or diseased, or that were elderly, they needed looking after, and they were well looked after, really well looked after.
Well, it's like we said last week, there's one thing that stands out with these 25 points is the sensibility of it all. I mean, they insisted that once someone was not able to work, the amount they received would be based on the amount they were given when they could work. So somebody on a decent wage is not then rock bottom, you know, on the equivalent of say, somebody who was on a measly wage. Did they try and make society fair?
Yeah, just rewards for the work that you've done, rather than just chucking people on the scrap heap and getting away with giving them the least amount possible. Or don't forget, also, there was this sense of responsibility for your neighbour, because your neighbour was the same ethnicity as you. He was an extension of your family.
He was German, yeah. You know, so you didn't want to see German him. And Christian ways in a Christian German country means, you know, one is not left afloat.
Well, it's essentially a Christian, you know, it's the Christian way, isn't it? Is to love your neighbour as yourself and want to, you know, the highest love is to lay down your life for your friends or lay down your life for your nation. So right at the heart of nationalism is that Christian ethic of loving your neighbour and doing what you can for them and having a good...
Instead of greed and what I can make for myself.
Having a good welfare state that looks after the weaker members of society is important. And we're not talking about morally weak or spiritually weak. I mean, the morally weak need to fight against their weaknesses, and the spiritually weak need to fight against their weaknesses. But people that are physically damaged and unable to work, you know, it's our responsibility to look after them. We don't want to create more of them, as I say, with the eugenics program. But people through no fault of their own, being harmed in an industrial injury or whatever, you know, they need looking after. And the National Socialists did look after them. So this was this is an important
point. I mean, I can remember pictures of Hitler shaking hands with all these soldiers or pilots who had been injured, or they're all in wheelchairs with arms and legs missing, and they were looked after.
And you look at our veterans today, a lot of them are homeless.
Yeah.
You know, never mind Prince Harry and his Invictus Games. What about all the ones that are on the streets, the alcoholics, the ones that don't have any roof over their head? Can't hardly afford
There's a number of them and all.
To live, yeah, there's a hell of a lot of them. There's a lot of them in prison as well. Hypocrisy really gets to me. Right, let's move on to the next one. Number 16. We demand the creation of a healthy middle class and its conservation. Immediate communalisation of the great warehouses, and they're being leased at low cost to small firms. The utmost consideration of all small firms in contracts with the state, county, or municipality. I'll just say two things about this. This is the opposite of what's going on in America. In America and in Britain, they want to wipe out the middle class, the proper middle class, the middle class that owns its own business. They want to get rid of all of that. Whereas the National Socialists wanted to save people that had their own businesses, these small businesses. And by the communalisation of the great warehouses, that would be getting rid of these huge, great supermarkets today and these huge great corporations that own everything. They wanted people to have their own industry. You know, Britain used to be a nation of shopkeepers, and now it's all packy shops everywhere. people want to have their own businesses. So even though this was national socialism, it wasn't the state owns everything. They wanted people to be responsible for themselves and have that, that feeling of contributing and of achieving something.
Well, this brings me to communism by the back door again, because there's one of the episodes I mentioned about how Tesco's have taken over all these, practically every village and every town you find a Tesco, which gathers up all the money, and the shops, these local shops, which used to be corner shops, double yellow lines outside, and forcing people then to actually find somewhere to park. If, they may have to even drive 2 miles to find somewhere to park, where Tesco's have these huge car parks, and it makes it all so easy. And it's deliberate. It's a deliberate agenda just to close the English shopkeeper, which, like you said, we used to be a nation of shopkeepers. How can you be a shopkeeper when you've got double yellow lines outside and nobody can park?
Well, that's just it, isn't it? That's the trick that they pull. And this is why people are against having a Tesco's in their town or having a big supermarket, because it will completely kill the town and it will kill the sense of community. I mean, you used to go out to the shops and you would have a chat and you would find out the local news. You would know everybody else that was in the shop. You would stop and talk to the shopkeeper for 5 minutes.
Bit of barter with prices.
You'd get that as well. And now you can go in a shop and they don't even speak the same language as you. So there is no sense of community.
I mean, these ethnics, they have their own. I mean, they don't suffer as much because, like, as you said, Pakistani shop, which sells Pakistani food, people will go to them shops, rather than go to Tesco's. Even the Jews have their own food. The Jews won't eat McDonald's and things. So, but we're, the white race is, again, been herded into in a way where, we're forced to go to these supermarkets. And, of course, a lot of the food they do sell is, I would say, not the best for your health.
Oh, it's horrible. It's all processed stuff, isn't it? Traveling all the way from halfway across Europe to get it. Whereas if you had a small family-owned shop, it would be buying produce from within 20 miles away. So it didn't have to travel very far, and you'd be eating the food that was nearby to you. This was one of the things that the National Socialists did. They wanted to have the means of production put near to where the raw materials were. So they wanted to build these new towns that weren't too large. They had just the right size so that people could still have a sense of community. And they wanted the towns to be near the raw materials and the processing plant to be there. So you had the work for the people there. They could go out to work, not too far. And all the raw materials didn't have to travel very far for them to be processed. And then they would be sold to the people in that area. And they wanted to make these towns like that, which is the opposite of what we have today with these lorries traveling all the way across from Europe into Britain, bringing eggs, milk, all these things that we could actually produce for ourselves in Britain, but we're not self-sufficient anymore.
You've just brought up another sore point. Every time I have a bit of a ding-dong with a Jew on YouTube and I mention this kosher tax that we pay, their excuse is, it's nothing, it's only a couple of pence. This is a tax that us whites pay so that the Jews can have this food, which is obviously of a higher standard than what the average white person is eating, and we're having to pay.
Yeah, I know in America it's everything with that K on it, isn't it?
On the tin.
I'm not sure what they have over here, but the other thing is that these big supermarkets, they're all owned by Jews.
Of course,
And this started over in Germany, in Weimar Germany. You had these big department stores that were doing all the small shops out of business, and they were all owned by Jews, because the Jew has always been a middleman. He's always bought what other people create and then sells it at a higher price. So it's a natural role for the Jew to take is as this trader. And what he's done is he's bought everything up and pushed everybody else out of business. So you've got, as you say, Dennis, you've got the white people that are struggling to make ends meet. in their village, a supermarket gets put outside, and then not only do people go to the big supermarket out of town, but then the council come in and put yellow lines around everywhere so that nobody can park to go to these shops either. And the shops basically can't make a living. The rates go up, so they can't afford them. And before you know it, it's all boarded over.
It's all charity shops. Duck City, isn't it? Yeah. All the just an eyesore.
If you go to the south of England, there's a lot of places in the south of England like that now. It's just all boarded up, or it's all charity shops where that Channel Tunnel comes in, all around there. So it's all boarded up.
Charity shops and hairdressers. That's all I can find.
Yeah. And that's because you're all supposed to just go to this big Jewish owned Mecca, this big temple of consumerism, where you're just supposed to buy. And none of that money goes back into the country. None of it goes back into the nation. If you're buying locally, it all goes back into the people around you. So it improves their standard of living because your money's gone. You're buying your goods from them, and they are buying their goods from somebody nearby.
And boy, do they pay bad wages.
Yeah. You treat the people badly. But it's this self-sufficiency idea. I mean, the Greens will say, oh, it's so good to be self-sufficient. You should be self-sufficient. You should grow your own crops. But then when you apply that to the nation, they're against it. You would think they would support it. If you say, we think the nation should be self-sufficient, we support protectionism, we think our own nation should be producing all these goods, they'll be against that. They don't want that.
Yeah, well, but I'm pretty sure there's a law, you know, which stops people from gathering rainwater.
If you
get a bucket out there, that can save you water, whatever. I think that is against the law. Somebody might correct me out there if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Well, it is, because they claim that the state owns all the water. But the thing is, the state has sold off all the water companies. They're all privately owned now.
God just meant it for a council, didn't he?
we have to pay for our water, which is a natural resource.
Which is a scandal, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the gas and the oil, the natural resources that come with our territory. But we're charged for it, and the money goes to Japan, China, or wherever these people are that actually own these companies.
Yeah,
probably with Jews at the top. Probably with Jews at the top as well.
No doubt.
Right, what's the next one here? Where did we get to? That was number 16. Number 17. We demand a land reform suitable to our needs, provision of a law for the free expropriation of land for the purposes of public utility, abolition of taxes on land, and prevention of all speculation on land. You just think today about how all the playing fields have gone. How they've sold all the playing fields off. None of our schools have got sports fields anymore for the kids to play on. Well, they've even got rid
of the rabbits at the local park. I could not believe it. They got rid of all the birds and all the rabbits to save what? I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I took the little one there and there was nothing there.
Well, they've got no interest in doing anything for the next generations. They want to take everything from the next generations for now so that they can then hand it over to the Jews. But I mean, this is really good. We want to prevent all speculation on land. That means none of this holding on to it and selling it at a high price and driving prices down so that you can buy it. And all this corruption that goes on with the councils, with all the building laws and building regulations that they have. You know,
am I right in saying, Sven, that the land under a house that's been bought is not your land? So basically the house really isn't your house, because whoever owns the land, which is probably the Crown again, can decide whatever happens to that land, which could involve your house. I'm pretty sure I'm right there as well.
Yeah, so it's owned by the Crown. They can requisition it at any
City
time.
Of London.
They say that all the land is actually owned by the Crown, and they just allow people to build on it.
Somewhere as well that the soldiers what go abroad, if they don't make a will before they go and they're killed, then all their property and everything goes to the Crown again.
Well, this is saying that free, we need a law for the free expropriation of land for the purposes of public utility. So we want forests, we want parks, we want green areas, and yeah. we want people not to be able to sell their
wildlife.
Green areas,
yeah.
build up on them. If you look at what they're saying now, they're you know, they've got to build, I think it's 1 ounce every minute or 1 ounce every 30 seconds just to cope with all the people that are coming from the immigration. Because we're not producing enough people to replace ourselves. So we're only producing, what, 1.6 for every two people. So the houses that are here are more than enough for all of our children. Every new house they build is for a foreigner.
People in Manchester every night, sleeping in doorways, they just move them out of sight. There's a hell of a homeless problem in Manchester.
Well, this is it, isn't it? They will point to that, say, oh, we've got homeless people, so we need to build more houses. But we can't need to build more houses because we're not producing enough people to replace ourselves. The reason why we've got homeless is because we've got immigration. It's because we've got foreigners here. When they say we need a new house every 30 seconds, or we need a new town the size of Liverpool every 4 days, or whatever it is, that's entirely to house this foreign invasion. None of it's to house white people, because there are more than enough houses here already to house all the white descendants. Think about that. And where they want to build these houses, where are they going to build them? They want to take up the green land. This is why all the sports fields have already been sold. And now they want to change the laws so that they can build on the green belt. That's what the Labour Party want to do. And people don't realise it. They don't.
And all this, is it Shell, is it, as well?
I'm not sure, but when you were saying there, Dennis, about the seeing the homeless people, people see the homeless and they think, oh, we need more homes. But that's not the reason why they are homeless. There are more than enough homes out there. And we need to put a stop to them doing this, because it's just destroying the country. And when they pull up all the trees as well to build the new houses, those trees act like a reservoir. When it rains, they suck all the water up so that the place doesn't flood. And this is why we're now getting floods throughout Britain. It's because they cut all the trees down to build their new houses.
I wonder why we're getting floods.
Yeah, that's the reason why.
We didn't used to get them like this, did we? I mean, not one, maybe, but...
They must know this. They must know that the tree sucks up all the water. If you get rid of the tree, that water is still going to be there every year.
And they're stopped giving insurance now as well to these places where they've been hit by floods and most likely going to be hit by floods again. Can't get insurance.
Yeah, and this is the reason for it. It's because they've sold land to people to build houses on, which they shouldn't ever have sold that land, because it was greenbelt land and it was covered in trees.
Profit, profit, profit.
Yeah, and what's that profit for? The profit is to go to pay interest. It's to go to pay usury, because the government can create its own money. It doesn't need to go to private banks and get the banks to create the money and pay the usury on top. The government can just produce its own money, and then when that money comes back, buying whatever it is that the government put the money out for to create, then they zero it. And that's what the National Socialists did when they took over the banks, which is we're going to get to a little bit later on these 25 points. Number 18, we demand struggle without consideration against those whose activity is injurious to the general interest. Common national criminals, usurers, profiteers, and so forth are to be punished with death without consideration of confession or race. So it's saying one law for all. Doesn't matter what race you are, if you're a usurer, if you're profiting from the misfortune of white people, then you should be punished with death. No question about it. Traitors, Jews, doesn't matter what they are. If they are usurers or they are profiteers, they should be punished with death. And it hasn't been been 1,000 years since anything like that was actually said, that usury was a crime that was up there with murder, that should be punished with death. I mean, that's quite incredible that they said
that.
It's
just accepted, isn't it?
Yeah. But if you think about it, anything that goes against the general interest, that means no degeneracy either. They're going to have to protect the virtue of the nation. And this, you know, and
that's the bottom of the list, that one.
Well, this is what I was referring to earlier when with the commenter that was saying, what about corruption? Well, this is saying that corruption is punished with death. Traitors and people that are profiteering from the nation's misery should be punished with death. It's a serious, you know, I mean, it's capital punishment here. So they're taking things really seriously.
And well, this brings me to another sore point.
Go on.
Theresa May, when she was Home Secretary, had this great solution for gangs in Liverpool. These gangs were going around robbing people, and I think the eyes could have been possibly used, you know, the like. And she says, don't worry, we will take the benefit off them.
What good is that?
She's just put every citizen in Liverpool in danger.
We have to have a strong forces of law and order. And to think that what they're saying here, I mean, they're saying that bankers should be executed for their crimes. And it is a crime what they're doing when you think about it. And the church said that, I mean, it was a mortal sin to be a usurer. If you were a usurer, they said it was up there with murder, but they wouldn't actually give you capital punishment. They would take everything off you at your death. You couldn't actually leave anything to your family. It would all get taken from you. You weren't to be buried in the churchyard. You had your name taken from you. And it was looked upon as a terrible, terrible thing to do, to be adding something on top, to be making a profit out of somebody else's misery.
That's why when you see these credit card adverts on the TV, it really annoys me again, because, you know, they're saying, you get this credit card, you're going to, you know, so much percentage interest, etc. And makes it easier than carrying cash. And it's usury, but it's been pushed as a popular item. And people don't realise.
Well, this shows you how bad it is, Dennis. We've had the Labour Party conference this week. And the shadow economic secretary or whatever he is, he said, what we want to do as Labour, we are going to make it so that if anyone gets out a debt on their credit card, then when they pay back the interest, we're going to make it illegal for them to be paid back any more interest than the whole amount of the debt. And he was cheered for that, for saying that when somebody pays back a debt, they're going to make it so that they can't be forced to pay back double the debt, or just double the debt at the most. Doubling the debt, doubling it.
Well, even if you pay minimum payments on a credit card, it just mounts up. I mean, this is, whoever thought of it, I'm convinced wasn't human. It's the most satanic way of actually screwing a nation that I know of. I mean, as you said, they take control of nations with this usury. It's just pure satanic, and the debt's never paid. In the old days, what they used to do is they used to go around to the borrower's house, the Jew's house, and burn the house down, and with it all the records of all the borrowing. But they want to cash the society shortly, and they'll know that they'll do it. And that's even more money what's going to be going straight into their bank accounts.
Yeah, compound interest is a weapon of war. Compound interest is the way they're done it. Gottfried Feder was the economist that Hitler went to see him speak, and he wrote this book, Breaking the Shackles of Interest Debt Slavery, and he pointed out in that how the Jews had managed to take control of everything through this idea of compound interest. And this is the thing that Marx
sets out. Because your debt's not coming down, you're just paying the interest off.
Yeah, constantly. And they don't want you to pay the debt. They want you to continually pay back that small amount. And you can be paying back that small amount for 100 years, and you still never actually pay the debt off, because you just make
the by the bank payment. There's another part on that one. It's a really interesting part, that one. Even I have my eyes open.
And this is what capitalism is based on. It's all based upon this interest and usury and making money from money, not from investing money in things to create something that's worth more, but just loaning out money so that you can get an extra amount put on top of it when you get it back.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they even print it these days.
Well, they print it. It's a bit complicated, but when you ask to borrow money, that's when they create it.
You don't actually see the money, do you?
Yeah, well, they create it then. That IOU, when you say, I wish to borrow £100, they create that £100 there and then. That's why it says on the notes, I promise to pay the bearer whatever amount it is. So they haven't actually loaned you anything. All they've done is they've published your promise. They've monetized your promise to pay that back. And then you have to pay that back, blood, sweat, toil and tears. You pay that back. And on top of that, you've got to pay interest as well. And the bank that created that has given up nothing of equal value in exchange for that. It's illegal for them to use people's savings to loan out. That would be risky. So they're allowed to just
the pensions and everything,
create it at need. And it's in the hands of a private company. I mean, the idea of creating money for an IOU, I mean, that's fantastic. That's great. But that should be in the government's hands. And there is no way on earth there should be a charge put on top of that.
Exactly.
Which is what this is. The usury is. And Marx was very clever because he left out everything to do with usury. And all he did was put in all these rich people have got everything and you poor people haven't got anything. So you poor people need to take it all back from the rich. And he left out the reason why these people have got so powerful was because of usury. And this was the major difference. Gottfried Feder identified that. He identified that it was compound interest that had made these bankers so powerful that had got the Jews to the position that they were in.
Why they were kicked out of 109 countries.
Yeah, that's the secret. That's what the truth movement misses out on. They miss the Jewish connection. They understand that there's usury. They understand that the bankers are the evil guys, but they miss out that ethnic connection. That's how these Jews got to be so powerful. And that's how come we've got these laws where we can't criticize them. We can criticize bankers. There's no law against criticizing bankers, but there's a law against criticizing Jews. And if you do
criticize bankers, which is a dangerous law, that, because this is the same law they brought out in the Soviet Union, you know, where you couldn't criticize them. And once you can't criticize them, then, you know, the world's their oyster. It's a very dangerous law, this.
Well, the funny thing is when you do criticise bankers, then they'll accuse you of being anti-Semitic. Because all the bankers are Jews.
Yeah. You know, went for a loan once, had a great idea, everything tied up, like all the contacts in America, everything was set to go. I went for a loan, you know what they said? Too good to be true.
Some things are too good to be true. This is very rare.
I still managed to pull it off without them.
Some things are actually true, even though they are very good, but it is very rare. Anyway, Dennis, we're getting near to the end of the podcast
now.
That's
slow, isn't it? My word.
It's shot past.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do part three next week, I think.
Coming by the back door and... Great story never told, and hopefully next week part 7 might be finished.
Well, if it's not, we can do part 3 of this anyway.
Yeah, we had a problem.
I'm sure people will enjoy it, whatever we do. Thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. We hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you. Yeah.